Well, good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. It is not Super Tuesday, but it is Tuesday night. Primaries in four states, including Texas and Ohio. The thing that is kind of weird to me today, and I noticed this today, yesterday, kind of a smattering of these kinds of emails coming in over the past couple of weeks, when on this program I have been highly critical of the Hillary Clinton voting record, the Hillary Clinton connections, the political connections, her comments, and so on and so on and so on. Much less critical of Barack Obama, perhaps because he doesn't have that much of a record for which one can criticize. But here's what I have found, and this is a striking thing to me, and I've not taken this into consideration. I don't know to what extent the Clinton camp has, and I think this is a tremendous, tremendous danger to representative government. And here's what I've discovered: an incredibly strong, visceral, emotional attachment, in this case, to Hillary Clinton. I'm sure that there is an emotional, visceral attachment to Barack Obama. I have not received those kinds of emails, though. I have gotten the ones from the people who are emotionally dedicated or bound up with or committed to Hillary Clinton. And when Clinton's voting record is challenged, there's nothing but crickets. You don't hear any response. I don't get emails that say to me, you know, vote for Hillary Clinton or support Hillary Clinton, Mike, because of her record. Let me cite you some examples of all the wonderful things she's done to forward the progressive or the liberal or even the Democratic Party agenda in this country. I never get those. What I get are these heartfelt, over-the-top, emotional outpourings of why I, and not everybody says this, but I get the intended meaning, I am a traitorous son of a bitch for not backing Hillary. And this is something new to me. I mean, I maybe I've been in the business too long, this talk radio business, where I look at all of these candidates with a cold fish eye. Maybe it's because, you know, I've taken it upon myself to get the information about their voting histories, or not just their voting histories, the history of U.S. foreign policy. If these candidates like McCain or Clinton are dedicated to U.S. foreign policy as it has unraveled in the past 20 or 30 years, then son of a bitch, it means they are warmongering imperialists. I don't care who it is. Barack Obama is real close to that, too. You know, what Obama talks about, and I don't have the quotes right in front of me right here, but I've been filtering them into the program. When Obama talks about a U.S. military presence here and there, I think to myself, well, okay, then Senator Obama, your chant and your very effective rhetorical approach to change is really bat squeeze, right? Now, I've said before, McCain, Clinton, and Obama are pretty much they're interchangeable parts. If you don't accept that, okay, I said that the other night, and immediately get this deluge of emails that, well, but you know, the next president of the United States is going to be able to nominate three Supreme Court justices. Okay, the key word there, if you don't know, booby, is nominate. The president of the United States does not appoint. It is up to the Senate. Now, let me ask you something. How did we get three, count them, three? No, four, if you count Clarence the Clown. How did we get four right-wing Supreme Court justices? That's right, because the Democrats in the Senate allowed it to happen. Now, this is all amazing to me. It really is. First of all, the emotional attachment, not the political attachment, not based on the record, not based on a foreign policy or domestic policy, not really even based on rhetoric, because none of these candidates are saying a damn thing. that connects to the real world. What are they saying? What are they talking about? They get up on their campaign rallies and they start screaming about all the people who don't have health insurance. Okay, we already know that. We've known it for 20 years. What are you going to do about it? Well, the one Democrat's going to force people to buy health insurance. Oh, there's a solution, which works right into the healthcare industry. The other Democratic candidate is going to force parents to buy health insurance. Oh, okay, so how is that going to grant universal health care, single-payer health care? Of course, and McCain couldn't care less. He doesn't give a damn. He's, you know, he's got his VA or his Senate thing. He doesn't care about health care. He couldn't care less. But neither does Obama, and neither does Clinton. Jesus, God, what's wrong with you Obama supporters and you Clinton supporters that you think they're serious about doing anything about health care? Look at what they say. Look at what they put out there as their health care plan. Zip, zilch, nada, nothing, junk. There is a Democrat who believes in single-payer health care. Oh, never mind. I get freaked out. Now, I realize that there are competing interests here. There really are. African-Americans are right on the edge because all of a sudden it appears that America is overcoming to some degree this hideous racism that's existed for 350 years. So African-American, black Americans are on the edge about that. Women of a certain age, or all women, hell, I don't know, are on the edge because, holy God, you mean after 230 years we might have a female chief executive? So they're on the edge about that. Both of those cases require, demand, an intense emotional commitment, right? How many African Americans are looking at Barack Obama's platform, such as it is? I don't know the answer to that question. It's a rhetorical question. I have no idea. How many women are looking at Hillary Clinton's platform, her ideas? Both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, in what I can gather from their rhetoric, are as anti-family as John McCain. What? And I toss this out as a challenge. Can anybody listening to this program tonight provide for me, from a Clinton position paper or an Obama position paper, or for that matter, a McCain, a Clinton or Obama position paper or point of view, a specific instance of legislation they have proposed or would propose or promise to propose that is 100% pro-family? Now, don't send me generalizations. Don't refer me to a 10,000-word position paper. Just tell me. And I'd be willing to bet, I don't know, something, a cup of coffee from superbeans.com, I'd be willing to bet that you can't do it. These are corporate candidates, all three of them. Their rhetoric may be pro-family. Hell, look at Bush's rhetoric back in 1999. The compassionate conservative, not going to get involved in nation building. Going to have a foreign policy that's respectful of other... Please! Now, it is not written anywhere that Republicans lie and Democrats don't. It is written that Republicans lie all the time. It's also written that Democrats lie most of the time. Now, you people need to either stop sending me these intensely emotional commitments to your candidate or else provide something to back it up that goes beyond your emotion. Really, I've never seen anything like this. That what you thought love was for. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost. Baby, you're lost.
speakers, it'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. Well, I'm looking up here on the television screen. Huckleberry Hound is dropping out of the race. Oh, there's a surprise. And another thing, I was watching a little bit of CNN tonight, which is getting more and more difficult. It's getting difficult to watch MSNBC, too. But Wolf Blitzer, the former German U-boat commander, who is now a commentator for CNN or an anchor, whatever the hell he is. I don't even know what Wolf Blitzer is. But Herr Blitzer said that McCain's winning the nomination tonight, and he obviously has done that. McCain's winning the nomination tonight was an historic event. And I'm sitting there thinking, what? What? You know, another old white guy who gets a Republican nomination. Of course, Blitzer throws around adjectives like historic and monumental and best and wonderful and, you know, all those adjectives he tosses out there as if they were so much confetti. But anyway, from the mouth of Wolf Blitzer himself, McCain's nomination tonight, or picking up enough delegates to be the presumptive nominee. See, they say presumptive because you never know. Somebody may get the nomination, then keel over dead of a heart attack or something. But somehow that's an historic event. And Huckleberry Hound is up there talking. His wife looks like she really, really, really has to go to the bathroom. They're both up there at the podium. If you switch over to MSNBC, I'm sure CNN is covering it too, but... So Huckleberry Hound is dropping out. We'll talk with some more politics here in a few moments. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I just can't get away from it. I'm sorry. This really, really, really caught my attention, this quickie I've got here for you, because I've honestly been talking about this, and I usually don't say things like this. I've been talking about this for about the past 20, 25 years, that the whole God concept as laid out there in the desert. You notice how many of these religions, at least the ones we pay any attention to and that tear us to shreds, come from desert tribes, whether they're Christians who are really just apostate Jews or Muslims. You know, all these desert people, the Bedouins, and these people that wander out there where all these hallucinating events can occur. Well, comes now a professor of cognitive psychology at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem. His name is Benny Shannon. And he has now claiming in a study published this week that when Moses was up on Mount Sinai, he was high on psychedelic drugs when he heard God deliver the Ten Commandments. Yeah, how about that? He's a professor of cognitive psychology at Hebrew University of Jerusalem. He wrote this in a journal called the Time and Mind Journal of Philosophy. He was on Israeli Public Radio today, Benny Shannon, and he said, quote, as far as Moses on Mount Sinai is concerned, it was either a supernatural cosmic event, which I don't believe, or a legend, which I don't believe either, or finally, and this is very probable, an event that joined Moses and the people of Israel under the effect of narcotics. End quote. Now, Shannon also suggests that Moses was probably also on drugs when he saw the burning bush. And Benny Shannon said he himself has dabbled with such substances. Who among us hasn't? Okay, the Huckleberry Hound hasn't. But Shannon said, citing the example of religious ceremonies in the Amazon in which drugs are used that induce people to see music, he said the Bible says people see sounds, and that's a classic phenomenon when you're high. Well, yeah, if the drug is a certain kind, you're damn right you can see sound. Any of you out there, any of you old drug heads, you know what I'm talking about. Benny Shannon mentioned his own experience when he used ayahuasca, a powerful psychotropic plant that you find in the Amazon, towards the end of his life. I think that was one of Hunter Thompson's favorites. But it's during a religious ceremony in Brazil's Amazon forest in 1991, Benny Chanon said, I experienced visions that had spiritual religious connotations. And he went on to say that the psychedelic effects of ayahuasca were comparable to those produced by concoctions based on the bark of the acacia tree that is frequently mentioned in the Bible. Well, it's not only the acacia tree, but also certain cacti that flourish in the Negev desert and the Golan Heights and various parts of the Middle East are extremely psychedelic, or more properly psychotropic. So when I saw that, I thought, well, yeah. There was an article written one time that said God was a magic mushroom. I think that was the title, or God was a mushroom, or something. But the implication was that if you get enough people together, remember, set and setting are very important. What your mindset is and what the setting is where you take the drug. And if you can imagine a bunch of Bedouins wandering around the desert. Here, Ahmed, try some of this.
Suppress, embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Your inner liberal warrior? Oh, okay. All right, a few emails here. In Ohio, it's already happening. Kel in Florida says, just heard more shenanigans occurring in Ohio. Not enough voting ballots in the metro Cleveland area. Gee, there's the surprise. Predominantly African-American area. Yeah, well, there's another surprise. Oh, my God. Ohio, my home state, the most corrupt dunghole in the 48 contiguous states. Now, I'm sorry if you live in Ohio. There's certain areas that are okay. Columbus, I guess. And the whole state would be okay, except for the fact that there's no work there and every politician is corrupt. Scott in Sacramento emailed me about, you know, I said, have any of these candidates come up with anything about single-payer health care? And Scott in Sacramento did exactly what I said, please don't do. He said, this is from Obama's website. I didn't know he was for universal health care until just now. Scott, I'm not talking about universal health care. That's not single-payer. Universal health care is like universal auto insurance. If you don't buy it, your ass is in trouble. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Canadian model. I'm talking about the French model. I'm talking about the Scandinavian countries model. Single payer health care. Run and financed through a tax by the government. What Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are talking about is a partnership, with the healthcare industrial community that will do nothing but continue to screw up the system. Scott sends me this from Obama's website, provide universal health care and lower health costs. Oh, okay, well, that's wonderful. And then it says Barack Obama is committed to signing universal health legislation by the end of his first term in office that assures all Americans have high-quality, affordable health care coverage. Scott, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about single-payer. His plan will save a typical American family up to $2,500 every year on medical expenditures by providing affordable, comprehensive and portable health coverage for every American, modernizing the U.S. health care system to contain spiraling health care costs. That's not going to happen. Jesus can't do that. spiraling. To contain spiraling health care costs and improve the quality of patient care, how do you improve the quality of patient care through legislation? You don't! And promoting prevention and strengthening public health to prevent disease and protect against natural and man-made disasters. What? How does universal health care protect against natural disasters? Well, I've got health insurance here. That means no tornadoes are going to hit me. Come on! Scott, I'm not yelling at you. I'm yelling at these candidates who put that kind of tripe garbage out there. Show me a candidate who says, all right, very simply, I'm in favor of single-payer health care provided in the same manner that they do it in, and then list off the countries. There is a candidate who, oh, never mind. Regarding Hillary and this emotional commitment, Barry writes, my opinion, Hillary Clinton has, by example, encouraged her followers to treat her as a victim. She seems to be practicing the paranoid style that one would associate with right-wingers. It's disgusting. I never want to see Bill or Hillary again after having pictures of Bill Clinton stuck all over my refrigerator for years and years. Chelsea, I have nothing against. When John Edwards suspended his campaign, liberal talk shows got a lot of emotionally affected callers, but they were sobbing and bittersweet, as you would expect, of liberals. Yeah, the ones I've been getting stop just short of accusing me of some sort of semi-religious apostasy or betrayal or something. Rick and Mesa writes, I hate to generalize, but I've been thinking for some time now that many Clinton supporters look at a Clinton presidency as some sort of payback or redemption for the impeachment of Bill Clinton. Yes, they support her for more than that one reason, but I can't help think that is one reason for the intense emotion in her supporters. It is ironic, in my mind, because I recall fueling the impeachment of Clinton was a payback for the Nixon impeachment to many Republicans, and now I view the Clinton policies as at times favoring policies I would normally attribute to Republican politicians. Bingo. I haven't seen any stories or polls in the media that ask this question of Clinton supporters concerning payback. If you've ever encountered this sentiment personally or in the media, I'd be interested in hearing about it. No, I haven't. From Prairie 2, regarding the Hillary supporters. Prairie 2 writes, they want the good old days. Hillary supporters think that they will get back those good old days. They don't care about facts. They just know things were better under Clinton, and they want that back. Like Republicans, they want a past that never really existed. And DB writes, speaking of psychotropic drugs, weren't you going to have a webcam installed? I don't know if that's still on the agenda or not. More drugs and bushes. This is from Kate. She said, I had a burning bush once. Someone set the couch on fire. I had to throw it out the window. Caught the bush on fire. Damn, them's good drugs. With Jim Morrison screaming in the background. Okay. Religion's a hoot. I mean, it really is, except when people start to die because of it. Then it's not a hoot. And the book I was thinking of, thanks to Bill from Ottawa, is The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross by John Allegro. Bill writes, title above, I read this years ago, good book, and yeah, Moses, Jesus, the whole bunch of them were stoned out of their minds. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So there you go, The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, if you want to. Now, I guess that, I don't know, the book I read was not all that much about Jesus, and that sounds like it's pretty Christian-oriented. That could be the book. I could be have the titles confused, but the one I read about was the whole idea of God. A supreme being, you know, monotheism was absolutely, totally a psychotropic experience that got way, way out of hand. As far as all sorts of gods, that was just kind of the way human beings explained phenomena that they couldn't explain otherwise. Whether they were, ancient Vedic writers or Romans or Greeks or Sumerians or you know, whoever they were, Native Americans, people in the jungles of Brazil, there were gods everywhere. But they were there to explain natural phenomena that couldn't be explained using science. Why? Because there was no science. Well, there was, but nothing nothing that would explain those sorts of phenomena, right? Oh, never mind. I get way too into the religion thing. But that's because of the death and destruction and murder that comes as a result of religion. Richard sent this to me. It's from David Cogswell's blog site. According to MediaMatters.org, during this week's Democratic presidential debate, I guess it was last week, Russert didn't ask a single question about global warming, continuing his long-standing habit of all but ignoring the topic. He didn't ask a single question about the mortgage crisis. As one Cleveland resident noted, quote, "We've got the mortgage industry's toxic waste scattered all over the city, but Mr. Blue-Collar Buffalo and Cleveland Marshall guy Russert couldn't be bothered with the question about it." He didn't ask a single question about executive power, the Constitution, torture, wiretapping, or other civil liberties concerns, but that shouldn't come as a surprise. Of all the questions he has asked while moderating presidential debates during this campaign, only one has dealt with any of those topics. He has, however, asked Dennis Kucinich what he felt compelled to insist was a, quote, "serious question," end quote, whether Kucinich has seen a UFO. Oh, and he asked about John Edwards' expensive haircut. Yeah, well, you know, we don't call him media whore number one simply because we're trying to be nasty, although there's that too. I call him media whore number one because that's all he is. MSNBC is owned by, dear God, General Electric and Microsoft. Hello? Well, what is Tim Russert going to do? Exactly what he's told. Have you got that, speaking of MSNBC, have you got that Willie Geist, Joe Scarborough thing? Okay, we got time to play it here. You can stretch a little bit. All right, this happened, I think, yesterday or today. And you've got to listen to this. Whether or not you are seeking the truth on 9/11 or not, this is a First Amendment issue. And MSNBC now has people on, in this case, Willie Geist on Joe Scarborough's Morning Joe, promoting violence against those who disagree with a government-controlled agenda. Listen to this bit of tape.
President Clinton was campaigning for his wife in Corpus Christi, Texas,
now, that's,
when an idiot started waving a sign that claimed 9/11 was an inside job.
Shut
up. As Clinton was working the crowd after the speech,
what's Rosie O'Donnell doing in Corpus Christi?
The man got close to the former president and started yelling at him. You don't do that, you see, because that's when the Secret Service steps in.
The
man led away in handcuffs,
bro,
and hopefully taken one of those secret prisons in Eastern Europe, never to be heard from.
Oh, I hope that happens.
Okay. We can only hope.
Will people leave that man alone?
I hope we have a special
Bill
prison
Clinton.
For 9/11 conspiracy theorists.
No, he wants
alone.
Really, Willie? Oh, really, Willie? You hope there's a special prison? You candy-ass son of a bitch, you. You sit there on the Morning Joe program and you say you hope there's a special prison. You want people to go through extraordinary rendition because they have the temerity to question this government lie? Is that what you're saying, Willie, you little punk? Well, I guess, you know, you work for MSNBC too, right, Willie? Huh? Second banana to a right-wing nutball like Joe Scarborough? Poor Mika Brzezinski, caught between these two jerks every morning. But Willie Geist, huh? Taser them, bundle them up, rendition them someplace, and torture them if they have the absolute temerity to challenge the 9/11 story. Jesus, God!
Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 9 before the hour. Yeah, poor Mika Brzezinski, who, as far as I can tell, is a pretty good news reader. She's good at what she does, and she's caught between these two white guys who both right-wingers, both obviously believe that the Constitution is, as Bush called it, a goddamn piece of paper. Those are Bush's words. And now, through Willie Geist, MSNBC can get away with everything. They're like Fox. MSNBC now, through Willie Geist, is promoting violence and torture against a fellow American because this guy, just Americans in general, who don't believe the official 9/11 story. Violence, torture, rendition. Man. Yesterday, Chucklenuts met with Lieutenant General Ray Odierno. And they had a little sit-down in the Oval Office. Invited in the press. Listen to this. You got to wonder if Bush is back on drugs. Comedian Richard Lewis said on Keith Olbermann a couple of weeks ago that he thinks the only thing Bush should be hooked on is phonics. And this sound we're going to play for you really drives that point home. No matter who wins the White House in November, at least we'll have someone who can speak English.
General Ray Odierno served for 30 months in Iraq. He's nominated to Vice Chairman of the Army. General, I want to thank you for your service.
Listen now.
I appreciate the fact that you really snatched defeat out of the jaws of those who were trying to defeat us in Iraq. You and General Petraeus are unbelievably strong 1-2 combination.
Yeah.
And my call and my assurance, sir, is that the gains that you and your teams have made will continue on, because stakes in Iraq are essential for peace, essential for freedom, and essential for the security of this country. I'm honored to be your commander-in-chief. Thank you, sir.
I'm honored to be your commander-in-chief. Odierno's sitting there and says, thank you, sir, and he's thinking to himself, you cowardly draft-dodging son of a bitch, I got to sit here and shake your hand. Okay. Well, first of all, Lieutenant General Ray Odierno, whose name Bush couldn't pronounce, was never nominated to be vice chairman of the Army. There is no such position! He was nominated to be vice chief of staff of the Army. And the line, I mean, it just drips. Once again, Bush's unconscious mind is just wide open. You could drive a Mack truck, even with an illegal immigrant behind the wheel, right through the caverns of Bush's mind. It all comes tumbling out. I appreciate the fact that you really snatched defeat out of the jaws of those who are trying to defeat us in Iraq. Jesus God, how much more of this? Well, also today, Bush had a sit down with King Abdullah of Jordan. And I want you to hear this before the break. He talked about the crisis in the Mideast and how he expects it will be resolved during his presidency. It hasn't been resolved for 60 years, but it's going to happen in the next 6 months. Yeah, okay, Chucklenuts. And he wants to go to Mars and maybe Jupiter. Why not dream big, dim sun, as long as you're drifting away here on Fantasy Island?
We spent a lot of time talking about the Middle Eastern peace process.
Yeah.
A couple of points I wanted to reiterate.
Yeah.
One is that the United States is engaged and will remain engaged in helping convince Prime Minister of Israel and President Abbas that now is the time to formulate a vision of what a state will look like.
Yeah.
And secondly, I assured His Majesty this is a major focus of my administration, and that I would like to see that vision, the process that we've started in Annapolis, finished prior to my departure from the presence. In other words, there is a... People say, well, you always set... You're hesitant to set timetables. But there happens to be a timetable, as far as I'm concerned, and that is I'm leaving office. And Secretary Rice is in the region today.
Oh, she's doing good, yeah.
She's making our views known that we expect these leaders to step up and make hard decisions.
Yeah.
And I told His Majesty I'm optimistic. Still as optimistic as I was after Annapolis.
Yeah, you're as optimistic as you was since Annapolis because you haven't stopped drinking since then. He says, I can't believe this. I would like to see that vision, the process that we've started in Annapolis, finished prior to my departure from the presidency. Oh, and I also want a new Xbox, and I want one of them laser pointers running left hanging around, and a cookie. And what else do I want? I want a whole bunch of things. It's astonishing. And this well-educated King Abdullah of Jordan sits there, and probably, you know, he's the second king, you know, in the same family of Jordan, but that's how it goes there. You know, he sits there and he listens to Bush talk about a democracy and representative government. And Abdullah sits there and he thinks, oh, God, oh, this man is the dumbest man ever to sit in the, oh, well, he'll soon be gone. We'll be back after the break. We have much more that you're going to love. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. About 7 past the hour, a couple of quick emails here, then we're going to do this final Bush soundbite when he met with King Abdullah of Jordan. Art writes in regarding Willie Geist on MSNBC. Mike, it should come as no surprise that little Willie Geist's first position at MSNBC was as a sidekick to Tucker Carlson. Wait, wasn't Tucker the guy who soiled himself when they wanted to make a war correspondent out of him? Between the two of them and the resident Nazi, Pat Buchanan, and assorted others, I've concluded that there is nothing at MSNBC to pay attention to other than Keith Olbermann. Yeah, and what is funny, I love watching the, I personally love watching the MSNBC coverage of these primary results. The ones that that contain the co-hosts are, what's his name, Olbermann and not Tim Russert, but Hardball, Chris Matthews. And I watch how Olbermann keeps getting in very subtle digs to this jerk Matthews, and very seldom does Matthews realize that he's being red-assed on cable television by Keith Olbermann. It's wonderful to see. That's a Bart Cop term, red-assed. This is from Beth regarding the people who are having a hard time dealing with these candidates other than on an emotional level. Hi, Mike. I've noticed a lot of hysterical callers to Stephanie Miller's show, too. It's unnerving. Unfortunately, we are an entire nation with post-traumatic stress syndrome, not just from one major incident, 9/11, but with nerve endings rubbed raw from constant fear-mongering and threats from the present criminals in the White House. I have heard psychologists say that it is almost impossible to completely recover from PTSD. I think raw nerves account for at least some of the emotion people are experiencing with respect to presidential candidates. I like to evaluate issues, etc., based on fact. I'd hate to think I was voting for someone mostly because of that person's gender or race, etc. However, I heard a political pundit say that people almost always vote on emotion. Beth, yeah, I've heard that true, but you make a good point. We have been rubbed raw. I know I personally have. As far as the horror of 9/11, it's just like the assassination of Kennedy. For the rest of my life, I'll remember what I was doing that morning when my daughter in Tampa called. And I'm laying in bed, and she said, "Are you watching CNN?" But I still, because I see it as a monstrous, murderous attack on this country, the truth about which we still don't know. And that's driving me crazy. And with all this talk and reality, not talk, the reality of the destruction of the Constitution by this criminal enterprise that controls us right now. Yeah, Beth is probably right. PTSD. All right. Bush today meeting with King Abdullah of Jordan. A reporter asked a follow-up question to Bush's happy talk about Israel and Palestine. Not to worry, folks. Condi Rison is on the case, the shoe lady. The worst Secretary of State in history will make it all better. You watch. Condi's over there in the Middle East. Yes, she is. What's she doing? Well, she's telling them, come on, talk. Come on, you got to talk. Where's the nearest shoe store? Where's the Ferragamo or whatever the hell those shoe stores are?
Ferragamos, because you know that there's nothing that Arab men respect more than an uppity black American woman. That's just tops on their list.
Or an uppity white American, or an uppity woman of any shade. Are you kidding me?
If she's not in a burqa.
The reporter says, Mr. President, are you disappointed about the lack of resumption in peace talks?
This is a process that always has two steps forward and one step back. We're just going to make sure that it's only one step back. Condi's out there in the region.
Woo!
And
And
sometimes,
yeah.
There's matters go on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
That aren't apparent in the public arena.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic, and we'll continue to work hard to help achieve the vision. Step one is to convince the leaders it's necessary, and to help them define a vision.
A vision.
So that a state can come into being after, conditions are met.
Yeah.
But a lot of Palestinians are probably are saying, we've heard this kind of rhetoric before, show us what a state looks like. And I said a state has got to be contiguous territory. It can't look like Swiss cheese. The Palestinians have got to understand that this is an option available for them. And it'll stand in stark contrast to the vision of Hamas, which has been nothing more than violence deprivation.
Okay, Hamas. Now, that's the elected democratic government that you tried to secretly overthrow. We'll get to that in a second. But he says it can't look like Swiss cheese, this continuous or contiguous or whatever you want to call it, George. It can't look like Swiss cheese. Can it look like Camembert? How about Gouda? How about Velveeta? Huh? Condi is in the region. Well, thank Jesus for that. Vanity Fair, the current issue, is a lengthy article. It was synopsized in the Jerusalem Post today. U.S. President George W. Bush is said to have approved a covert initiative to overthrow the Hamas government shortly after Hamas won the January 2006 parliamentary election, according to confidential documents obtained by Vanity Fair. So, let me digress. When this nasty rat bastard Bush says, there's matters going behind the scenes and aren't apparent in the public arena, this is what he's talking about. He says, so a state can come into being after conditions are met. Yeah, they had an election, the Palestinians did, and Hamas won. And, the Palestinians are saying, we've heard this kind of rhetoric before. Yeah, from you and all sorts of American presidents. And he says, the Palestinians have got to understand there's an option available and it will stand in stark contrast to the vision of Hamas, which has been nothing more than violence and deprivation. Oh, you miserable bastard. Hamas is the organization that the Palestinians elected. And then you and Rice and Jesus Christ, Elliot Abrams, The convicted felon from Iran-Contra immediately went to work to overthrow Hamas. There's a hell out there, George, somewhere for people like you. It's not a religious hell. But it's waiting. According to the Jerusalem Post, the documents, which have been corroborated by sources at the U.S. State Department and Palestinian officials, reveal that the plan was supposed to be implemented by the State Department. The report confirms allegations by Hamas and other Palestinians that the U.S. has been supplying Fatah with weapons and money so that its forces could bring down the Hamas government. The magazine said that Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Deputy National Security Advisor Elliot Abrams were entrusted with provoking a Palestinian civil war. Let me repeat that. Vanity Fair magazine, as quoted in the Jerusalem Post, said that Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Deputy National Security Advisor Elliot Abrams, another mass killer, were entrusted with provoking a Palestinian civil war in which forces led by Fatah strongman Mohammed Dahlan, fortified with new weapons supplied by America, would remove the democratically elected Hamas government. The State Department, according to Vanity Fair, declined to comment. The magazine quoted a former U.S. intelligence official with experience in covert plans who said the plan was, quote, close to the margins, end quote, with regards to its legality. An impeachment is off the table. George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Elliot Abrams, provoke a Palestinian civil war.
Than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor. It's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour. So the Vanity Fair magazine has gotten its hands on the documents. See, there's still holes in the internal security of this country to keep the crimes of the Bush crime family out of the eyes of the public and certainly out of the hands of the press. There's still holes there. Synopsized in the Jerusalem Post, the magazine said that Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Elliot Abrams, Deputy National Security Advisor, were entrusted with provoking a Palestinian civil war. And they succeeded, of course. The report said that instead of driving its enemies out of power, the U.S.-backed Fatah fighters inadvertently provoked Hamas to seize total control of Gaza in June of 2007. Now, this is precisely what they wanted. They wanted the civil war, they being Bush, Cheney, Abrams, and the neocons, the American Zionists, who dictate almost all U.S. foreign policy, but certainly the foreign policy that goes on in the Middle East. Hamas was elected by the people of the Palestinians. No. We'll have none of that. Oh, no. When Bush talks about democracy, he does not mean the kind where people vote for their leaders. No. Where it concerns the Palestinians, he means the kind of leaders selected by default, by passive operations, by Israel. That's what he means. David Wormser, who resigned as Cheney's chief Middle East advisor a month after the Hamas takeover, said he believed that Hamas had no intention of taking over the Gaza until Fatah forced its hand. David Wormser is a neocon. David Wormser is a Zionist, an American Zionist. Even he says that this whole thing stunk. Wormser said he was especially galled by the Bush administration's hypocrisy. He said, quote, "There is a stunning disconnect between the president's call for Middle East democracy and this policy. It directly contradicts it." End quote. So he resigned, and for that I certainly respect him. The report uncovers three different confidential memos that describe the covert plan. One, prepared by U.S. Consul General in Jerusalem, Jake Walls, states how the Bush administration intended for him, Walls, to tell Abbas, the head of the Palestinian president in Fatah, in Ramallah in 2006, to dissolve, Abbas is the Hamas, to dissolve the Hamas government if it would not recognize Israel, promising the U.S. would back him if it did. The second memo, drawn up by the State Department, asserts that means had to be found to produce an end game by the end of 2007 for Abbas to remove Hamas from power by collapsing the government, and that he must be given the means to strengthen his forces. And according to the Vanity Fair report, the third memo, described as a U.S. action plan for the Palestinian Authority president, set out a plan by which Abbas would fire his own Fatah Hamas unity government and rely on a security deal, a secret security deal, between this guy Dahlan, who is, the Fatah strongman, Mohammed Dahlan, rely on a security deal between Dahlan and others to strengthen Fatah's forces. Meanwhile, the magazine said, U.S. officials, led by Condoleezza Rice, had spent several months begging Arab governments for money in order to supply Fatah's forces with new weapons from Egypt under a previously undisclosed covert U.S. program, a scheme described by some sources as Iran-Contra II. Mohammed Dahlan goes on the record about these events for the first time, saying that despite pleas from Fatah that they were unprepared for elections, Bush pushed ahead anyway. Dahlan is quoted as saying, "Everyone was against the elections, everyone except Bush. Bush said, I need an election. I want elections in the Palestinian Authority." Following Hamas's victory, the report quotes an official with the Department of Defense as saying, "We sat there in the Pentagon and said, who the F recommended this?" So when you hear that, now that's the article in the Jerusalem Post. If you want to read the whole thing, and it is lengthy, go to vanityfair.com. Excuse me. I printed it off today, and it took 21 pages to print it off on my printer. But if you want to see the criminal activities of your government in full flower, just read it. And at the same time, this hypocritical, stupid, ignorant son of a bitch in the White House is lecturing people about how he wants democracy. He sits there with King Abdullah. Now, do you think King Abdullah of Jordan doesn't know exactly what's going on? He has an alliance with Israel. They provide each other with intelligence. Abdullah sits there while Bush says this garbage, and Abdullah, like General Odierno, are sitting there thinking, Jesus, let this end. My thoughts would be busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander.
Sometimes I'm happy, you know, but wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
about 25 before the hour. Now, on top of the these revelations that Condoleezza Rice, Elliot Abrams, and George Bush conspired to overthrow the duly elected government of the Palestinian Authority, the Guardian of the UK reports a recent poll published in the Israeli daily Haaretz suggested that 64% of Israelis favored a negotiated truce with Hamas. But in the past few days, the military onslaught that has so far claimed more than 125 Palestinian lives, mostly women and children, has made it clear that the Israeli leadership is not interested in any peaceful exit from the current predicament. The Guardian story also says the Israeli establishment is incapable of learning a single lesson from past experience. Hamas, like Hezbollah and the Palestinians, like the Lebanese, have no choice but to fight back until the Israelis are forced to retreat. Few people thought that Hezbollah could defeat Israel in 2006 in Lebanon. Fewer people may think today that Hamas is capable of something similar. They might be surprised. The number of casualties among the Palestinians will undoubtedly be much higher, but Israelis will die and suffer too. The only way to avoid a bloodbath is for the Israeli army to withdraw immediately from Gaza and negotiate a truce before it is too late. The author of that is Dr. Azam Tamimi, the director of the London-based Institute of Islamic Political Thought. He is also the author of Hamas, Unwritten Chapters. It's just incredible. You know, it's one thing for me to sit back, as I have over 22 years, and whine about, well, I don't like to bring up the topic because there's no solution. Yes, there is a solution. There always has been a solution. But I, you know, I'm just past the point of even caring whether or not it's a topic that, you know, one just shouldn't bring up in American media. Well, you don't talk about that, Mike. Jesus Christ, come on. You want AIPAC on your ass? AIPAC has been on my ass for years. I couldn't care less. People of the Jewish faith in this country know full well, most of them silently, and I say most, just like the survey in Israel, most of those who responded, and it's a representative sampling, support negotiations with Hamas. Most American Jews understand and do not support Likud. Most American Jews understand the situation and how bloody it is, was, and shall be. It is a horrible situation. It seems to be an insoluble situation, but it is not. Okay. Moving right along. From Jay Stevens, Mike, like you, I lived in Ohio. Excluding the South, Ohioans are the most politically stupid people in this country. They also would never vote in numbers for a black man. Instead, they will vote for the woman whose husband championed NAFTA through the Congress. She also voted to ensure that a trillion of our tax dollars would be wasted in Iraq. So, large numbers of Ohioans are out of work, without health care, without a meaningful education, and their children are saddled with an insane debt that will be taken out of their meager checks for the rest of their lives. The 60 Minutes piece, excuse me, with the desperately confused and ignorant Ohioan who thought that Obama was a Muslim, was one of the saddest things I have ever seen. The follow-up piece on the medical dental emergency team in Louisville that used to go into third world countries to provide charity care, but now spend most of their time in the USA, providing charity care to people here, made me want to scream. Our boomer generation has been the biggest failure in American history. Well, certainly in the biggest failure in American history in terms of our political class. Now, this I like. In a major step for the U.S. labor movement, the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, the ILWU, has announced that it will shut down West Coast ports on May 1st to demand an immediate end to the war and occupation in Iraq and Afghanistan and the withdrawal of U.S. troops from the Middle East. This is the first time in decades that American Union has decided to undertake industrial action against a U.S. war. The action announced by the powerful West Coast Dock Workers Union to stop work, to stop the war, should be taken up by unions and labor organizations throughout the United States and internationally. And the purpose of such actions should be not to beg the bourgeois politicians whose hands are covered with blood, having voted for every war budget for 6.5 years, but a show of strength of the working people who make this country run and who can shut it down. Well, this is from Portland Indie Media, portland.indymedia.org. I hope what they're saying is true. If it is, it could be the start of support from the labor movement to end this madness, or it could be the precipitating event that causes George W. Bush and Elliot Abrams and Condoleezza Rice and the rest of these mad sons of bitches to declare martial law. Oh, God. From Captain Mary. Oh, wait, no, I'll get to that in a second. Jack sent this to me. Regarding Willie Geist's comment on MSNBC, and let me just requote it for you. In response to the arrest of a 9/11 demonstrator during a Bill Clinton appearance in Corpus Christi, corporate media shill and former Republican Congress critter Joe Scarborough and his co-host, Willie Geist, demanded that 9/11 truthers be tasered and taken to detention camps. "Where's the taser?" Joe wants to know as MSNBC runs footage of the man's arrest. "Tase him," his co-host adds, that's Willie Geist, adds, "led away in handcuffs and hopefully taken to one of those secret prisons in Eastern Europe and never to be heard from again. I hope we have a special prison for 9/11 conspiracy theorists." Okay, let's see. Here's a couple 9/11 conspiracy theorists. Major General Albert Stubblebine, U.S. Army, retired. Former commanding general of U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command, also commanded the U.S. Army's Electronic Research and Development Command and the U.S. Army's Intelligence School and Center, former head of Imagery Interpretation for Scientific and Technical Intelligence, 32-year Army career, member Military Intelligence Hall of Fame. Here's one. Colonel Donald Ray, United States Marine Corps, retired, Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense during the Reagan administration. Highly decorated Vietnam veteran, 2 Silver Stars, a Bronze Star, and a Purple Heart. Appointed by President George Herbert Walker Bush to serve on the American Battle Monuments Commission and on the 1992 Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces. He's a military historian and deputy director of field operations for the United States Marine Corps Historical Center, Washington, D.C. Okay, that's a couple that Willie Geist and the dumb bastard Scarborough wants to see renditioned and tortured. Here's another one. Lieutenant Colonel Robert Bowman, U.S. Air Force, retired, Director of Advanced Space Programs Development under Presidents Ford and Carter, U.S. Air Force fighter pilot with 100 combat missions, doctorate in aeronautics and nuclear engineering from Caltech, former head of the Department of Aeronautical Engineering and assistant dean at the U.S. Air Force Institute of Technology, 22-year Air Force career veteran, also taught mathematics and English at University of Southern California, and so on. Oh, gosh, here's another one. Colonel George Nelson, U.S. Air Force, retired, former U.S. Air Force aircraft accident investigator and airplane parts authority, graduate, U.S. Air Force War College, 34-year Air Force career. Oh, here's another one. Captain Russ Wittenberg, U.S. Air Force, former U.S. Air Force fighter pilot with over 100 combat missions and more. Oh, here's another one. Captain Eric May, U.S. Army, retired, former U.S. Army intelligence officer, former inspector and interpreter of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty Team. Oh, here's another one. Ray McGovern, former chairman, National Intelligence Estimates, CIA, responsible for preparing the president's daily briefs for Ronald Reagan and George Herbert Walker Bush. 27-year veteran of the CIA, former U.S. Army intelligence officer. Oh, here's another one. William Christensen, former National Intelligence Officer and Director of the CIA's Office of Regional and Political Analysis, 29-year CIA veteran. And there is more. There are more. Go to PatriotsQuestion911.com. PatriotsQuestion911.com. And look at all the America-hating, tinfoil hat-wearing jackasses that ought to be tortured.
And the greatest is love. I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran.
Defining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
Anger management, huh? I just want to drop this in from Captain Mary in Memphis. It really is not necessarily pertinent to what we're talking about today, although it may be overarching in its importance because of this religious insanity that has brought us to where we are in the Middle East and well, all sorts of events. Look at any period in human history, but certainly in the Middle East. Mary writes, interesting that the big three, she's talking about the most aggressive and nasty-minded religions in the world, all stem from the same bloody little desert god, very jealous of his pee-pee, his breeding stock, and his water rights. Been going on like that ever since. Men never... and then she's got some quotes here. This one's from Pascal. Men never commit evil so fully and joyfully as when they do it for religious convictions. Here's one from Emo Phillips. When I was a kid, I used to pray every night for a new bicycle. Then I realized that the Lord doesn't work that way. So I stole one and asked him to forgive me. From Richard Lederer, there was a time when all people believed in God and the church ruled. This time was called the Dark Ages. Here's an unknown. Give a man a fish and he will eat for a day. Teach a man to fish and he will eat for a lifetime. Give a man religion and he will die praying for a fish. Thomas Jefferson said this one. I have examined all the known superstitions of the world, and I do not find in our particular superstition of Christianity one redeeming feature. They are all alike, founded on fables and mythology. Here's another unknown. People who don't like their beliefs being laughed at shouldn't have such funny beliefs. This is from James Morrow. There are no atheists in foxholes isn't an argument against atheism. It's an argument against foxholes. And one more unknown. Why be born again when you can just grow up? Captain Mary.
Hillary has just projected the winner in Ohio. I just wanted to interrupt you with that so that we weren't totally scooped. But also, I think one of my favorite bumper stickers of all time has to be, born okay the first time.
This comes from Joseph, and he signed his last name, and he says he's a Vietnam veteran. Dear Mike, in all my days, I'm 60, I've never seen the corporate media go after a highly intelligent female such as Hillary Clinton like a pack of ravenous wolves. We've slowly seen how everyone under the age of 30 and the uninformed have migrated toward the Obama camp simply because the corporate media has painted this candidate as a messiah. Whew. The Republican Party has always been known to hold black people in contempt and barely tolerates some of them in their own party. But now, to see them embrace this person is highly suspicious. What do they have planned for him after he gets nominated? Or even more drastically, what do they have planned for him after he takes the oath of office? The facade has even affected the liberal talk show hosts around the nation. They are fooled into believing that Obama has the credentials to lead a nation, when in fact he hasn't had the experience to navigate through complex negotiations that a seasoned politician such as Hillary Clinton can handily mediate. I've never seen such hate for a gifted politician such as Hillary. Even Keith Olbermann has jumped on the hate bandwagon. Whatever happened to journalistic integrity? I'm so disgusted about all of this juvenile behavior that I'm turning my radio and television off to such idiotic behavior. And God help us pick the strongest, smartest leader. When the Clintons were in office, this nation experienced a period of prosperity surrounded by the desolation brought on by Republican presidents, both before and after their tenure in office. Hillary Clinton was a part of the administration which eventually left office with an economy that was flourishing. They created 81 million new jobs, and not your weak burger flipping level that the Republicans have eked out and tried to claim as progress. When they left, we had a balanced budget. And now to hear people talk about how tired they are with the prospect of having another Clinton in the White House. There's a corporate media which seeded that idea. The corporate media has its marching orders to raise Obama to godlike status and suppress Hillary Clinton, no matter what it takes. They're even trying to switch the tables by mentioning that they'd rather see Hillary get in because they will be able to beat her. A little reverse psychology? Does corporate media think we're that stupid? They may fool those under 30, but there are knowledgeable people who have lived through the 60s and have seen the deviousness of the Republican machine. Republican machine is capable of. Everyone seems to forget the main goal of this campaign, and that is to get the most efficient public official we can get to battle the Republican profit machine. I've never seen such myopic chauvinism from all you male talk show hosts in all my life. Who cares what the past harbors? We need to keep in mind what a candidate can deliver now. I say to all those who believe Obama, choose the person who stands for experience and the know-how to get us through these dangerous times. For the nation and the world are in balance. Sincerely, Joseph, and his last name, Vietnam veteran. Well, I didn't realize I was coming across as a myopic chauvinist. I thought what I was doing is carefully and studiously researching the records of both candidates, researching who they're connected to, who supports them, what their positions have been in some cases over the past 10 years, what they have espoused in non-elected positions, non-official capacities, what their plans were about, what they are promising if they're elected. And I come to the conclusion that both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are, to use a phrase, corporate candidates. It just so happens that Hillary Clinton's proposals for me suck. Now, if that makes me a myopic chauvinist, okay. I like to think of myself as I've thought of myself since the first time I voted, and that is an informed voter.
Story in your eyes, it's
Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. I think I kind of ran the clock into the ground right towards the end of the last segment. What I was saying, to be told by someone who emails me that because I am not a supporter of Hillary Clinton's, I am somehow a myopic chauvinist, is just so far out there that I should probably just ignore it. But the point I was trying to make is that I don't think I qualify, because what I've tried to do, since I am a Democrat and these two people are the ones left standing, is to check their records, whatever records they have in any capacity as a representative of the people, either in Illinois or in Washington, it really doesn't matter, what they have done in their private lives, who supports them, who does not support them, what do they say on their campaign websites, how much of what they say on their websites is just nonsense or purely political rhetoric. Given the realities of how our system works, which of their promises do they have an ice cube's chance in hell in getting through a Congress, and so on and so forth. In other words, since I first started voting in the 60s, I have, honest to God, busted my ass to try to understand which of the candidates, which of the Democratic candidates, would be the best for this country. And then I voted accordingly, given whatever the choices were available to me. Now, again, the real Democratic candidate in this election doesn't have an ice cube's chance in hell. And he's the one advocating single-payer health care, immediate withdrawal from Iraq, a complete revamping of NAFTA, if not throwing it in the damn garbage, and just on and on and on. All sorts of positions that are purely Democratic, but he doesn't have a chance. So I am left with two corporate candidates, one of whom is a white woman, the other is a black man. No matter who I vote for, it's my personal business, and I will do so out of default for not having a candidate available who is a real Democrat, a real liberal, a real progressive, or a combination of all three. Now, if that makes me a myopic chauvinist, I think the person who wrote the letter is a jerk. How's that?
Well, you're one. No, you are. No, you are. No, you're a...
This is what it's come down to, you see. So I will accept your accusation and just make my point and move on. This comes from Mark, who writes, "Hi, Mike. I just heard on MSNBC they were comparing McCain to Churchill." Oh, my God. "I'm a Brit who lives in L.A., and when I heard this, I was sickened. McCain is not even fit to lick Churchill's boots. And I am completely insulted that this warmongering idiot Q-tip be compared to the greatest British person and leader as voted in a BBC poll. Churchill never sought war like McCain does. He was reluctant to become prime minister and only did so not for personal glory but to save his country. He was an inspiration to a generation of Brits and led the nation through its darkest hour. I appreciate McCain's service in Vietnam, but his politics and actions since then lead me to revile him. He should take his medals and retire, not send his country into the darkness. Thanks for letting me rant, Mark," and his last name. The only thing I disagree here with you, Mark, is McCain's service in Vietnam. McCain is another one of those war criminals who had no problem violating just damn near every tenet of the Geneva Conventions. And then when he got caught bombing civilian infrastructure and murdering civilians, he paid a pretty high price. 5 years in the Hanoi Hilton and torture to the extent that his arms were permanently pulled out of their sockets and he can't raise them any longer. Well, that's Newton's second law of motion or karma. Take your pick. Or is it the third law? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. What is, oh, to hell with it. Don't send it to me! Trisha Nevada writes, "Mike, did you mention Hillary's vote for cluster bombs?" In fact, I have. "Why isn't everybody in the media jumping on this story? Why isn't Obama? Raging hypocrite Hillary claims to be a child advocate, even wrote a book, which I must admit I never read, on the subject. Then, in 2006, she bows to the bosses at Textron, who manufacture cluster bombs. Obama voted for banning these indiscriminate weapons. Trish in Nevada. And then she sent me a link to the website, Providence Daily Dose. February 21st, just passed, written by Dave Siegel. Last October, in an examination of campaign contributions in 2007 from employees of major defense industry contractors, Thomas Edsel wrote on the Huffington Post that Senator Clinton took $52,600, more than half of the total going to all Democrats, and a figure equaling 60% of the sum going to the entire Republican field from the defense industry. Her closest competitor for this money is former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney, Republican, who raised $32,000. Critics have previously rapped Clinton for voting in 2006 against Senate Amendment 4882, which would have banned the sale of cluster munitions for use in heavily populated areas. And then it goes on to say how elected officials and activists demand that Clinton return donations from these military contractors, especially Textron. If you don't know about Textron, it's a company that bribed Saddam Hussein's regime, worked outside the strictures of the oil for food or oil for whatever the hell it was called program that was set up by the UN to try to make sure that the people of Iraq got some of the some of their money, as Bush likes to put it, for food and medicine. Textron was one of those companies that said, screw this, and had their side deals going with Saddam Hussein. And they manufacture cluster bombs. It goes on, various elected officials and anti-war activists are calling on Hillary Clinton to return campaign contributions from Textron, a Rhode Island-headquartered Fortune 500 conglomerate from whose PAC Clinton took money in 2005 and 2006. Textron bribed the Saddam Hussein government during the lead-up to the Iraq War and is a major manufacturer of cluster bombs, which yield high rates of civilian casualties. Last August, the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Department of Justice fined Textron more than $4.6 million in punishment for more than $600,000 in bribes that the company's subsidiaries paid to Saddam Hussein's regime from 2001 to 2003. Textron paid the bribes to Hussein to obtain contracts within the UN Oil for Food program. The SEC found that Textron's corporate leadership knew about the bribes and was negligent or was negligent in not knowing about them, either knew about or was negligent in not knowing. In the fall of 2002, Hillary Clinton voted to authorize military action against Iraq, saying of Hussein, quote, Saddam Hussein is a tyrant who has tortured and killed his own people, even his own family members, to maintain his iron grip on power, end quote. In 2005 and 2006, she accepted campaign contributions from Textron's PAC, whose bribes would serve to further entrench Hussein's despotic regime and facilitate its ability to perpetrate atrocities against its own citizens and coalition forces. Oh, and just a postscript, Textron, you know, is a major manufacturer of cluster munitions. The Red Cross and the UN have decried the use of these bombs. The UN has found that 40% of those killed by cluster munitions are children. And it goes on. It goes on and on and on. If you want to read more, ProvidenceDailyDose.com. ProvidenceDailyDose.com. Hillary in the arms industry.
Why do you hate women so much?
Oh, stop. Oh, by the way, Barack Obama voted to ban cluster bombs. Now, see, that's right, Kathy. That makes me a chauvinistic son of a bitch who just can't face the fact that the best leadership for the United States rests in the heart, soul, and hands of Hillary Clinton. We'll be back after the break.
radical talk radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Hey, whatever happened to the report about John McCain's special relationship with lobbyists? You know, not the sex part, if there was any, but just, you know, John McCain, who presents himself, my friends, as someone who, my friends, is so squeaky clean, my friends, that he would never, you know, have anything to do with lobbyists, my friends, unless they're in the telecom business, my friends, and then, you know, he'll bend over backwards, my friends, to get things done. Marie writes, Jim Mike, I just heard Clinton winning in Ohio. The nightmare. Don't the people who have lost their jobs to NAFTA not care about her support for NAFTA? Well, one of our emailers earlier tonight said it better than I could. He was originally from Ohio, and so am I. I went to, you know, I went through school there. I grew up there. But the people in Ohio are as racist. Now, I'm if you're from Ohio, I'm not talking about you, are as racist as anything you'll find here in the South. A lot of people say, well, why do you live in Georgia, Malloy? what's the difference between Georgia and Ohio? I realize those are not the only two choices, but I'm just saying. People in Ohio are maddeningly ignorant and proud of it. Now, I'm talking about politics here. I'm not saying that all the people in Ohio are, you know, yada yada. I'm talking about from a political point of view. Ohio has gone Republican on a state level and a national level for so long, while their veins were being opened by Republicans. Their life force was being dumped on the ground over and over and over again. It took the atrocity of the 2006 election. The 2004 election didn't even do it. It took the atrocity of the 2006 election. It took report after report of people not being allowed to vote. Now, the fact that a lot of those people were black Americans is dovetails perfectly with the attitude in Ohio. Ohio is comprised of a huge, huge population of white ethnics, Eastern Europeans, going back two or three generations, who absolutely hate the darkies. I'm sorry I grew up in this. I know what I'm talking about. So for Ohio to go for Hillary Clinton, who claims, at least she makes the thinly veiled claim, that she has had all sorts of experience in the White House, who was an ardent supporter of NAFTA, it's astonishing to me. But this is the way it works in not just Ohio, but in the entire country. We have no memory, certainly not a political memory. This is a popularity contest. This is not about governing for the next 4 years. This is not about the candidate that can solve these problems, working with the Congress, working with the courts, working with the military, working with the people in this country, getting control of the oil industry, the telecom industry, the pharmaceutical industry, providing health care. That's not what this is about. It's not about that. It's about who the average voter can cluster around and say, oh, I love her. Oh, I love him. Oh, you know, I went to a rally and, oh, Jesus, I thought, I felt like I was floating. This is so sick. But this is what has happened. But why? Are we going to blame each other? Say, well, we're dumb. Yeah, well, that too. We're ignorant. But we also, don't forget, we have a media, a news media, whose sole objective is to make us forget. Television news, television in general, but especially television news, is there to make us forget. When I worked in news, radio and television, I learned that the last story of every newscast was called the kicker. And it was supposed to be something light or silly or bouncy, cutesy. And the reason for that was to, it's kind of like the use of the chemical Versed when you go have oral surgery or you go have a colonoscopy or any type of procedure that requires conscious sedation. The Versed prevents you from retaining memory in a given period of time, half an hour, hour, 2 hours, however long it takes, depending on the dose. You're not really unconscious, but the drug Versed is specifically designed to disallow your brain from retaining and filing what happened. That's what the kicker on a television or radio newscast does also. It totally eliminates what they just told you with a happy-ass story about some little kid who found a puppy and called somebody who brought him an ice cream cone, and his mom heads the church group. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 25 before the hour. All right, let's do some phone calls here, starting with Douglas, who is listening in Sacramento on KSAC. Hey, Douglas.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you.
My pleasure.
I just wanted to, I had a little bit to say about some of the people who were dunning you, I guess is a good word for it. I like this show because I learn things, and that's because of the way you handle it. And when I'm on like tonight, and I get to listen to a lot of stuff I haven't heard before, I'm happy about that, even if it takes a long time to get on. But if I'm in line behind a crowd of people who are calling you names or calling you a name caller, that's when I feel cheated.
I appreciate what you're saying. It just comes to the territory. Again, politics in this country has become a blood sport. It's like professional wrestling. It's like a soap opera. I think that has been achieved in a number of ways, not just the failure of media to focus on critical issues, but also because we Americans, we don't want to be informed. We want to be entertained. Consequently, we have this enormous entertainment industry, which has infected everything that every medium that we would normally turn to get some information. So we are kept ignorant deliberately. You must keep your population ignorant if you're going to be a corporatocracy or a corporatist state. And that's precisely what's going on. So, you know, I guess I'm hard on the idea that most of us are just as ignorant as a sack of doorknobs, but you know, ignorance is not terminal. Stupidity is. People can stop being ignorant the moment they want to, and I just constantly hope that day will come where it concerns our politics that we just stop being ignorant.
Yeah, there's a couple things I try to remind myself of. One is, if I don't have some way of deciding when I'm wrong, and if I don't check that once in a while, make sure it works, I'm blinded in chains.
Yeah.
And the other is, I must laugh, for I dare not scream.
Yeah,
And usually when I think about the media, that one comes up.
Well, that's probably a rational way to look at media, that you've got to laugh so you don't scream.
You're 9/11 truthers?
Yeah.
You put them up against any of those pathetic mediacs who were dunning them.
Yeah.
Do you think any of them even have any scholarship? Do you think any of them could stand up to your 9/11 truthers and pass as a half-wit, even if they thought twice?
Yeah, not the mediacs. The people in media, like the Scarboroughs and the Willie Geist and the Tucker Carlsons and people like that, they are, to some degree, entertaining. That's why they're there. They're not there to inform. They're there to obfuscate and hide and so on and so forth. And I don't think any... That list of former military officers and, that I read off who are part of the 9/11 Truth Movement, I don't think anybody is stating categorically, here's what happened. I think there are an awful lot of theories out there. I mean, here's what happened being diametrically opposed to the official story.
Oh, yeah, I get that.
Nobody in the Truth Movement, what they're doing, they're saying the story from Washington is a filthy lie. Now let's try to find the truth. Even the so-called Truth Commission, insisted upon by the widows, of four or five widows of people, of men who were killed there, it took their effort to insist that a commission be set up. And then in front of that commission, Bush and Cheney had to go together and would not testify under oath. Jesus Christ, what does it take for Americans to realize what's staring them right in the face? But no. Willie Geist and Joe Scarborough and the rest of them. I think people who talk about conspiracy ought to be sent to a torture camp. Nazis. These are Nazis. That's what fascism is all about. These are Nazis. And here we are. So anyway, hey, Doug, I got to move on. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, just jerkwad Nazis. The idea that someone in this country cannot challenge the official story put out by an administration that lied us into war. Hey, Willie. Hey, Scarborough. Hey, the rest of you halfwits. You are saying that the Bush crime family is telling the truth on this one? What about the war? What about every single thing they've lied about? But this one, they're telling the truth? You dumbasses, you are so bad because you have these positions of power and authority. You're on television. Scarborough is a former member of Congress. You guys can sit there every goddamn morning and just push it down the throats of the American public. Just jam it down over and over and over again. It's just, I do get, as you can tell, very, very frustrated about all this. But no less authority than Joe Scarborough and Willie Geist can advocate the detention and torture of someone who challenges Bill Clinton in a public forum to address the 9/11 issue. And then while the poor wretch is being dragged away by the police in handcuffs, these two punk asses on MSNBC start yelling at their monitors, yeah, throw the son of a bitch, send it, rendition him. Yeah, send him one of those prisons and you're not, send him to Guantanamo. You filthy pigs. You retain for yourselves the right to your so-called freedom of speech, but God help somebody else who does the same, right? Because they're not paid $2 million a year to sit there and talk your garbage. Damn both of you. Damn all of these people on television who just constantly belittle and denigrate folks who don't share their pathological neo-Nazi game plan. And the people in Ohio, well, if you liked Bill Clinton, you're going to love Hillary, right? Huh? Oh, by the way, did you know that March 19th, what's the day today, Kathy, the 5th? 4th? In about 2 weeks, will be the 5th anniversary of the invasion and occupation of Iraq. Do you know we have been in this war longer than we were in World War II? Do you know we have spent more money on this than I think when all the bills are paid, if they ever are, we will have spent more on this than all other American wars combined. Oh, my God. It's astonishing, isn't it? Back to your phone calls. Who we got here? Scott is calling from Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Scott.
Yeah, this election just seems to be a choice of between McCain and McCain Light, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah, I hear
that. It's like, you know, as far as from what I've been able to see, both supporters of Hillary and Obama can get just as nasty as can be. You know, just like when that thing came out, when Obama made that statement on The Nation about, you know, he wouldn't rule out using mercenaries over there. You know, you have people who are coming out and saying, well, what's wrong with that? And just like people on the other side talking about Hillary's experience, or as I would say, non-experience, you mm-hmm. know, 8 years in the White House bedroom does not make you experienced.
No, if I'll tell you what, if having sex with the president made you experience, let's give a cabinet post to Monica Lewinsky.
I know, that's what I have.
That's what somebody emailed me tonight. I can't take credit for that.
But, you know, but that's the thing. It's just the difference between, you know, McCain and McCain Light. And if you're asking me if I'm going to vote, who's going to be my executioner, you know, I'm not participating in that.
I hear
I'm
that.
Sorry
yeah.
about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, as far as where both of these people are concerned, you know, I'm sorry. The Democratic Party is destroying themselves. Well, they destroyed themselves anyway long before this. But, you know, now it's gotten to the point where it's disintegrated worse than anything that I've ever seen in all my years that I've been on this earth.
What never fails to amaze me is the expediency and efficiency used by the national media and the Democratic Party leadership to dispose of any challenge to the Democrat light or the Republican light that now constitutes the upper tier of the Republican or Democratic Party. It's amazing to me how they work so closely together to get rid of people like Dennis Kucinich or John Edwards. Just push them down the black hole. They're gone. Scott, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in.
Okay.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, Sandy writes in. She identifies herself as a registered nurse, 53-year-old white woman who will be voting for Ralph. Hi, Mike. I loved your analogy comparing the drug Versed with the kicker of cute puppy stories at the end of the evening news. In addition to making a patient forget the experience of an unpleasant medical procedure, like an endoscopy or a defibrillation, the drug Versed also has the wonderful quality of rendering patients completely compliant throughout the procedure. Compliant and amnesiac. An apt description of the U.S. electorate. Thanks, Sandy. No, I love Versed. Oh, my God. I love those huge gaps. I don't know why. It's bizarre. I've had four dental surgeries that required the use of Versed. And every time I come out of it, it's like, whoa. It's like, I don't know. It's like, I don't know how to describe it. I've had one real surgery where general anesthesia, I didn't like that. But Versed, when you come out, it's just like, hi. And Kathy always has a vanilla milkshake ready for me. You know, vanilla milkshake and huge clots of blood. You know, boom, oh, that tastes so good, Kathy. Gull, gull. Molly in the back seat, what's wrong with Daddy? I love Versed. I can't help it. Thanks to the crew who made this evening so wonderful. Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, Chris in Minnesota, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Catherine Bay, who are in order, our engineer, our technical director, our podcast manager, our senior correspondent, our resident philosopher, our writer in residence, and our executive producer.
You watch out, because you praise Versed too much on the air, someone will send you some, you know?
Ooh. All right. We got time. Yeah, we have lots of time. Sarah is calling from America, Texas. Is that the name of the town, Sarah?
No, this is me. Remember, I talked about Alice Cooper for president, and I called you a really long time ago.
Oh, that's right. Yes, you did. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Mikey.
And now,
Mikey, let's get Mikey. He'll speak anything.
What? Oh, yeah. Don't give it to Mikey. He doesn't like anything. Now, you're how old, Sarah?
15 now.
15 now. All right.
Yeah. So, I was 14 when I called you first.
You haven't called in a year?
I haven't called in, like, I just turned 15.
Well, happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you.
So what you got on your mind?
Well, I had one thing about Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and
okay,
then one thing about me, and I was going to request a song.
Oops,
if no. I had time.
Now, don't do that. All right, we got about 3 minutes here. Go.
All right. So I'm not really interested in the Barack zombies or the Clintonistas. Oh, wait. It's getting foggy. Edward, is that all? That's you in the fog? Nader? You're not Edward.
Hey, Sarah, will you stop pushing the keys on your phone?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was.
Yeah, okay. All right. Now,
is
next.
That better?
That's
is
much
that better?
Better. That's better.
I'm sorry. Did you hear any of that?
I got it all. And I also got when you push the... Okay, go ahead. Next.
And I also wanted to say that, you know how Sadie Hawkins Day was a couple of days ago?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, my mom's name is Sarah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, they call me Sadie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I came within about a hair's breadth of calling Alice Cooper's radio show and asking him to marry me.
Why would you want to marry a creepy old man?
Oh, because he is the greatest ever, and I love him.
Well, Kathy was about to say that's what she did.
Copycat.
All right, Sarah, what else? Come on, we're getting down here. We're getting down. All right, go ahead.
Can I request a song?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. Elected by Alice Cooper. It's the perfect election song, whether or not you like rock and roll, whether or not you like Alice Cooper, you know. But it's just the perfect election song.
Okay, Elected by Alice Cooper.
Yep, Billion Dollar Babies, 1973.
All right, Sarah, listen, we'll get the hot hits out to you coming up right after this traffic and weather report. Thank you, Sarah, for checking in. All right, Sarah in Texas. All right, Alice Cooper coming up next right here. We play the hot hits and the oldies all on NOVA Radio, your spot on the dial. Hey, all right, huh? You like? Now what? No, never mind. I love our listeners. Especially the ones who like Alice Cooper. Sarah's a good kid. Arnold is calling from North Carolina, listening on Sirius. All right, Arnold, you got about a minute, pal.
You sound like one of disc jockeys from Toledo, Ohio.
I know, isn't that awful?
Hey, listen, you were talking about the people in Toledo having mind-numbing sensations of trying to beat somebody after the Republicans have ripped them off their
right.
behinds, you know. You know, I watched the 60 Minutes, this guy that was on there, he had me crying.
Yeah, you know, you're not the only one who has said that. I got to see 60 Minutes, the segment that I wanted to see by going to YouTube. But I wish I would have seen the Ohio one. He's the one that said, well, isn't Barack Obama a Muslim, right?
Yeah, after he sit there and had everybody crying, I mean, I even Arnold had tears running down his cheek, you know. And then he says, well, okay, and Barack Obama won't put his hand over his heart, and he puts his hand on a Muslim Bible. I said, my God.
I know.
He needs 8 more years of George Bush. I see you, Mike. I know you got no time. I see you, buddy.
All right. Take care, Arnold.
Right, man.
All right. Take care. He also said Barack Obama doesn't know the Pledge of Allegiance. Was that on the program, too? Huh?
Yeah, it was really spooky. I mean, it was like one of those guys they find out in the yard sitting on a toilet instead of a, you know, porch swing.
We'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Thanks for participating. However you did that tonight, I do appreciate it. Take care. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.